This morning, we are honored to have a guest speaker, Maxwell Hines. Every year, our church's tradition is to have our seniors speak and share a little bit about who they are, what their experiences have been, and where they are going. I'm particularly proud to introduce Maxwell today. One, he's our only senior, but Max is a real role model for all of us. I've had experiences with Max working with me. Independently, he has done a lot of great things here at the church. Anything we ask him to do, nothing is too humble for him. I know that Pablo has asked him to do many a thing that was not fun, and he did it. He's worked with me with the kids and with youth, and he's an amazing man, because many times when you work with teens and you make suggestions to them, you know, they don't really want to hear what you have to say. But and maybe that's true, Max, with your mom and dad, but it's never been with me. He's an amazing man. I think you will enjoy hearing about him and what he has to say. But first, I'd like Max's family to stand up. Just all of you stand up so we can give you a round of applause. Come on, everybody. Bravo. Bravo. And mom is here too. She was already standing, so yay for her. Okay, Max, the floor is yours.
So growing up in a Christian household and here at Westwood, I've learned countless lessons about God and Christianity. Yet it seemed the more I learned, the more I found myself questioning. When I was 8, our family friend, a sweet, caring 6-year-old girl named Jenna, tragically passed away. She would bounce around with a radiant smile, making it impossible for those around her not to feel her joy. This devastating loss left a giant hole in her family and community, and it also bore a hole in me. This void filled with my first questions about the existence of God, the relevance of religion, and my personal relationship with faith. In recent years, as I learned more about the history of the Methodist Church, my questions multiplied. I challenged my own misgivings and have spent more time in the church and with our clergy, as well as dedicating myself to intense personal examination. Then I was struck by another dilemma. Perhaps religion is an important part of my life, not because of how it touches me, but because of how it gives me the ability to touch the lives of others. My epiphany caused me to reflect on my past service opportunities with my church. Using church as a vehicle, my acts of service and support brought joy and humanity into the lives of many who didn't necessarily subscribe to the same faith. For the past 5 summers, I've traveled with our Westwood Church youth group to locations across Western United States, often on Native American reservations, to help renovate homes for underprivileged families. I will get my tuba from Keith soon for my 6th trip: Walker River, Salley, Smith River, Chiloquin, Salley, and Chiloquin again this June. When work subsided, I socialized with campers from various churches and learned many faith-based lessons. Although I participated in these religious activities, read scripture, and sang hymns with my fellow parishioners, I have not felt connected to the religious side in the same way that others did. Yet I've increasingly felt the impact that my service had on the lives of families. Each year, my appreciation for how I've touched people's lives and the satisfaction that it brings has grown. I've reached my own conclusion about religion, particularly Christianity, and it's not what my family thinks or would like for me. I do not see faith as knowing fables or parables, ringing doorbells to convert others, or even showing up to church every single Sunday. Christianity for me is about my connection to the community created by faith, a community that spreads generosity and hospitality with humility. When I look back on these service trips, I do feel that faith, as I look at it now, has made me a better person. Those whose lives I touched weren't necessarily Christians. They were loved ones, just like my family, who just needed help. Without my church, I would never have been able to meet them, aid their struggles, and improve myself in the process. My final high school English paper compared Hermann Hesse's novel Siddhartha to Kanye West and T-Pain's song Good Life. I took a chance with that, and it was a fun way for me to cap off my high school English experience, and it went well. In my paper, I said that the novel and the song each show me to a path to a feeling of perfect existence, and the appreciation for the feeling in its own existence, and how grateful a human should be to be able to experience the feeling. Whether your trigger is the smooth melody of the 808s or the rhythmic flow of Hesse's imagination, the feeling continues to bring a sense of calm and perfection with this presence, like a glove. In the end, I've only felt positive feelings regarding my relationship to the novel and how it influenced my thinking about a topic that naturally was on my mind from time to time. Siddhartha changed my thinking and part of my view on life in a way that I did not realize when I first read the novel, but months after. To have music, something that I love and associate with, connect with an idea brought to my mind by Siddhartha created a spark that has changed my thinking forever. And similar to my experiences with music and literature and comparing those, my religion has helped me access this additional purpose or realization though my path may not be identical to the person next to me. I have a better appreciation for how my perspective can change over time. Religion has helped me bring joy and kindness into the lives of others. And my views of Christianity may not fit the traditional mold, but I've enjoyed the camaraderie of working with like-minded people to serve families in need. While I walk the path of self-discovery and learn what faith means to me, I will continue to seek opportunities to be a good Samaritan. I can certainly suffer through a few more sermons in order to do so.
So we started off really fun, didn't we? Maxwell is an amazing man, and I'm glad that we could hear his message to us this morning. I do want to ask you to please pray for these youth. Connor, Tyler, Amanda, Charlotte, Maxwell, and Miles. Because this is a very challenging event that they go to. I mean, first of all, you didn't see me up there going with them, did you? I mean, these are courageous adults. But it's a great time, it's a great experience, and I think from Maxwell's message this morning, you realize it does dramatically affect their lives. So please pray for them. I also, before I start, want to thank Irene, woohoo, who's directing our choir today. Andrew is sick, and so he let us know last night, and Irene stepped in like that, so we really appreciate that. I chose this scripture this morning from the Gospel of Mark because it's my favorite story about Jesus. There are two separate stories, and there are two separate miracles in these passages. But both Mark and Luke put them together, and they are presented as one. And I don't think that that is an accident or coincidental. Both stories are about people who are at the end of their rope. Both stories are about healing. Both stories are about humility and hope. Desperation, healing, humility, and hope. These stories are about us today. When I read the Bible, I often like to sit there and say to myself, what is this passage telling me today about my life? Because the answer is often different than the last time I read it, depending on where I am and what I need. So I want to unpack this story, and I'm going to start with the woman in the crowd. And that's how I'm going to refer to her, the woman in the crowd. So this is what we know about her. She has been bleeding for 12 years, and her sickness continues to get worse, despite the fact that she has seen many doctors. She has spent all of her money. She knows about Jesus. Her focus is not to speak to Jesus. It's just to touch him. She believes if she can just touch his clothes, she will be healed. She is willing to fight a huge crowd to get near to Jesus. And when she successfully touches his cloak, she is healed. There are no words exchanged, I don't think there's any eye contact. There's nothing. She is simply the woman in the crowd. Now let's look at Jairus. This is what we know about him. He is a leader in the synagogue. He respects Jesus so much that when he approaches Jesus, he bows or falls to the ground, depending on which version you read. He knows about Jesus because he works in the synagogue. So he is taking a risk to go to Jesus and ask for something. But he begs Jesus to come because he knows that if Jesus comes to his home, his daughter will be healed. And we know that before Jesus can get to his home, he is informed that his daughter has died. These are two different people, right? Different socioeconomic situation, different crisis. One is for herself, one is for his daughter. But both believe one thing. The answer is Jesus. So we really have to think about what aren't facts. We have to make some assumptions here. And I know some of you are laughing about that, assumptions, but we're going to do it anyway. So once again, let's start with the woman in the crowd. We know she's Jewish. That fact tells us that most likely she has been spending her days over the last 12 years washing clothes, washing her supplies, and trying to keep clean. We know she is exhausted because of that. We know she's lonely. Because of her religious beliefs, her condition prohibits her from worshiping or spending time with her community. She was literally put in isolation. As most of the women's social activities revolved around their religious community, she was lonely. We think she was probably a mature person because she walked to Jesus alone, without any escort, without anyone. And a younger woman would not have been allowed to do that. It would be scandalous. But we know she's desperate. She broke all the rules to seek healing. Now Jairus, he is courageous, as I said, because he has decided to publicly turn his back on the Pharisees and go to Jesus. He's humble. His actions prove that as he falls to his knees and begs Jesus to help him. And he trusts Jesus. This is one part of the story I find terribly fascinating. If you read it, when the people come from Jairus' home and tell him that his child is dead, and when Jesus stops to find out who has touched his cloak, Jairus just stands there. He doesn't say to Jesus, come on, we don't have time for this. He waits because he trusts Jesus. He knows that Jesus is in control. And I think as a leader in the synagogue, he probably had a lot of people doing exactly what he said to do whenever he said it. But he was patient with Jesus. This is a great story. You wonder what's going to happen through the whole thing. When I teach this story to children and to youth, and they're not familiar with it, they are sitting on the edge of their chairs. What is going to happen? What is Jesus going to do? The other character in this story, of course, is Jesus. And as Beverly said, he's returning after doing a really major intervention miracle. And we're going to talk about that one next week. He is walking and he is totally surrounded by people. If I was a sarcastic person, I would say, not like this morning. Okay, people were sort of smooshed together. Do you remember when you were exhausted and you were at your wit's end? You wanted the phone to stop ringing. Are you not going crazy with these robocalls on your cell phone now? Seriously? Oh, it's driving me nuts. Do you remember when you wished your kids would have stopped saying, Mom, Dad, just be quiet for 5 minutes? Do you remember when you wanted to close the door to your office and just say, leave me alone? Have you ever thought, you have got to be kidding? I just need 5 minutes. I think maybe Jesus was feeling that way too. I think Jesus wanted the people to understand the big picture. He wanted the people to understand why he was here. But like all of us, it's all about us. Often we want something for ourselves. Jesus was a celebrity. And the people pushing and surrounding him, they wanted a piece of that celebrity. But the stories, these two stories, they're not about the crowd. They're about individual people. When the woman touches his clothes, not his body. Isn't that crazy? I mean, I love that. Not his body, his clothes. She is healed. She doesn't say a word. She is healed. And I don't think once she's healed, she's looking to talk to Jesus. I think she says, okay, I'm out of here. But Jesus doesn't let that happen, does he? He does not let her leave. He proclaims that someone has touched him. And like every one of you and me too, I would have said to Jesus, duh, of course someone touched you. Someone is pushing us. We're being pushed and prodded. But Jesus wants to make sure the crowd knows what has happened. And I think there's a reason for that. For her own sake. Remember, she's been sick for 12 years. The community knows she's been sick for 12 years. She is not part of the community any longer. And Jesus wants the people to know that she is now clean. He is proclaiming her clean. She can now go back and join in the community and not be isolated and not be lonely and be part of that. He makes that public proclamation. He wants the crowd to know that this woman is important. You as a crowd, as a synagogue, as a religious community, may have isolated her, but she is important to Jesus, and he wants to make sure that they know that. And of course, when Jesus is making this proclamation, we find out that Jairus' daughter has died. The people who come to tell Jairus that say, don't bother the teacher anymore. But Jesus doesn't even act like he hears that. He just looks directly at Jairus and says, don't be afraid. Believe. Believe like this woman just believed. Purely, simply, not complicated. When Jesus and Jairus approach the house, we know that the mourning process has already begun. People are crying and wailing outside. Once again, a crowd. And once again, Jesus just narrows that crowd down and focuses on the individual. He only allows three of his disciples and Jairus and his wife to go into the house. They go in, five people and a dead 12-year-old. How does he restore the child? The same way he restored the woman in the crowd, through touch. She touched Jesus, and Jesus reaches out and touches this child. Don't you love the end where it says Jesus told him to give her something to eat? I mean, how practical is that? It's not complicated. It's a simple thing, a touch and a healing, but not so simple. these stories about are about the power of Jesus and the power of the people who have the courage to believe. The woman in the crowd had been bleeding for 12 years. This woman was untouchable. It was against Jewish law to reach out and touch her. And Jairus' daughter, who was only 12 years old, was dead. Once again, it was strictly prohibited to touch a dead person. But it sure didn't matter to Jesus, because he used these two women to teach something. The crowds really didn't matter right then either. These are personal stories. The marginalized people of the world matter to Jesus. The privileged and the elite people of the world matter to Jesus. We all matter to Jesus. But the thing is, we have to believe that we matter to Jesus. We know that Jesus matters to us, but it is harder to believe that we as individuals matter to Jesus. When I was putting this message together, I sat and I tried to visualize you, and I tried to pray for each one of you. Some of you, I don't know your name, but I know your face. And I prayed for you because the individuals matter for Jesus. And it is so hard for us. It is just so hard for us to believe that every day. It takes time to believe that because you have to spend time in prayer and meditation. It takes courage because you have to sort of call out your own bad behavior and try to do better. It takes grace to accept everybody in the world, people who disagree with you, people who have different opinions, people who don't see the world the way you do. Sometimes it takes silence to listen to God. And it takes forgiveness to forgive others who have hurt you and to put it behind you and not relive it day after day. And it takes love, not easy love for your friends and your neighbors, but love for all people. And it takes touch. And I don't think anybody could have said how important touch is more than Maxwell did this morning. Because his belief is being a Christian is touching people's lives, people who are in need. How articulate is that? Because we have to touch. We have to be Jesus' healing hands in this world. As Jesus touches our hearts, as he touched this little girl, as the woman in the crowd touched Jesus, we have to use touch to be truly in a relationship with Jesus. We are just one person. And yet, believe me, no one is more important to Jesus than you. No one. No one. Amen.